Can you hear me without the microphone?
Yes.
You can? I'm going to be talking today about my spiritual journey. And the way it happened, I suggested that we share our spiritual journeys. And I think Giuseppe suggested someone. I think it was Giuseppe said, why don't you start? So that's why I'm here. My name is Arjun Ghosh. Good morning, friends. My name is Arjun Ghosh. And I was born July 3rd, 1933, which would make me 85 years old. So there's only one person in the congregation who supersedes me, and that's Charles Blue, I believe. So other than Charles Blue, I'm the senior member of this congregation. So I was born in Rangoon, Burma, as I said. And when I was 4 years old, I was living in a bungalow, a big house with a yard and a snippy peacock and a shy deer. And I was the youngest of six children. And my sibling closest to me was 7 years older. And of course, he didn't want to play with me. So I was very lonely. My father left the family, all six of us. And he took a second wife. And I was 4 years old at that time. And that's one of the best things that happened to me in the sense that I moved away from that area to the working poor quarter of Rangoon, 2 blocks away from the Sule Pagoda in Rangoon. And within a few months, everybody in the town knew, it was a small town, not a small city, and they knew me, so I could wander around. I was a precocious little boy. So I'd be wandering around at the age of 5 all over the area. I'd spend on Sundays, I'd go, Saturdays or Sundays, I'd go and spend time with the novice monks. Now, in Southeast Asia, it's the custom for young teenagers, if they wish to do so, to spend one year of their lives as a monk, and then they return to their families. So I love to hang out with them and hear their chants. So I found out about faith. They'd be chanting, and I'd be sitting there trying to understand the chants and chatting with them. I had a first cousin. I want to expand. I also spent time with the fisherwives on the street, the farmer's market. And at night, I'd go to the Ma Maxim's dance hall across the street from me and spend time with the dance hall girls. So I had a very mixed relationships. My first cousin, Bula, same age as me, would come and play with me about 3 or 4 days of the evening after school. And one day she didn't come. And I found out that she had died of spinal meningitis. So I asked my mother, where is she? Those who believe. The reason she said those who believe, because my father left. And after, when my father left, I found out later, my mother said, if this happens to a devout Hindu wife, there could be no God. Later on, I reconverted her, but she became an atheist. But she said, they say that she is in heaven with God. And I said, can I go there? She said, no, you can't. Now, I was going to an Anglican school, St. Philip's School, and I'd seen the Christian children pray. So I said, can I pray for them? If you believe, you may pray. So I learned prayer. I got this gift of prayer from Bula. And I still remember her, and I still thank her every day for this gift of prayer. The next year, there was a cook who worked for the bachelors. They call it the bachelor's mess. It was a dormitory where the Indian people who worked in clerical jobs, etc., came and they bunked there. And there was a cook there, and his name was Krishna. He was from South India, and in the summer he'd just wear a lungi, muscular brown body. So anyway, I was sitting on the veranda of the house, and I saw him being stabbed. At that time, there were riots from time to time. This was a riot among the Chinese and the Kurungis. The Kurungis were the people from South India, Tamil Nadu, came there. And he was in a pool of blood. I called my mother, and my mother covered my face. I said, Krishna's dead. But Krishna did not die. He survived, and within a couple of months, he came back and started cooking. And he was very proud to show his scars. And he'd say, I was stabbed 4 times, and I lived. I said, no, you were stabbed 3 times. I saw it. You don't know. And I overheard him. I loved that little boy, but he is so argumentative. The bombs dropped in Rangoon, December 28, 1941. And we were in a building, kind of like a tenement building, and we huddled in the basement just under the Royal Stationers. We had bales of paper above us. If a bomb had dropped on us, we'd all have gone up in planes. But that did not happen. We were spared. A friend of ours came in a convertible and led us to a safe place with a relative. But I lost a couple of friends in that. I used to have another playmate, and her name was Gauhar Sultana. She came from a Sufi family. And I remember the Sufi chants when I'd go to their homes. And I remember also the lovely kebabs that mother made. Gauhar Sultana was a blue baby. There was something wrong with her heart. And in our play, you had to humor her, because otherwise she'd go into a fit. Well, Gauhar Sultana died of fright when the bombs dropped. Another person who died later, we were able to get a boat to escape. But a family friend of ours, the Charis, he's the principal of a school, he and his family trekked all the way from Rangoon to Calcutta, which a lot of people did at that time. She didn't survive the trek. She was too weak, and she died just before they reached Calcutta. So anyway, we spent some time with a relative, and then we got a boat to Calcutta. As the boat pulled out of the Irrawaddy River into the Bay of Bengal, a school of dolphins leaped in an arc. And I asked my mother, what is that? Those are shushuk. Shushuk is Bengali for dolphin. What does that mean? That means from now on in your lives, you'll have peace. I have been fixated on dolphins still since then. I have dolphins everywhere. Decorated dolphins, I have a dolphin buckle. So anyway, in November 22nd, 1944, I still remember the date. It's probably one of the worst days in my life. A telegram came. I had two brothers in the Air Force. This was my third brother, Torun, who was really the nicest one in the family. He always liked to help people. He was a flyer and he was in training. And I got the telegram that the Indian pilots had the salvage planes, which were too dangerous for the British pilots to fly. And his plane exploded and he had died. And I got the telegram. And I remembered what my brothers told me when they went off to the war. We're going off to the war, we're probably going to come back. But if we don't, we want you to be a man. Don't cry, take care of our mother. So I didn't cry. I just read the news. And everybody wondered why I didn't cry. 16 months later, my other brother, he died. He had been in the Burma front. He'd been in combat. He was an instructor in the Air Force. And he got an appendix attack. It was late at night. And at that time, they didn't have Indian doctors. The British doctors were all drunk and didn't come on time. So he died of an appendix attack. So he also died, and I got the telegram, and I read the news. Well, my hands broke out in a rash. And the doctor wrote, his hands broke out in a weeping rash. I couldn't cry, so my hands wept for me. India and Pakistan, India was partitioned into two countries against the will of Mahatma Gandhi. And August 15, 1946 was designated as Direct Action Day. In other words, you kill each other. And in my neighborhood, actually there's something I have to go back. I also so witnessed the Great Bengal Famine of 1943, where families died on the streets and were picked up in trucks and carted away. 1 million people died. You can Google all this on find out, Great Bengal Famine. Then there's Direct Action Day, August 15th, and I was in my home and I saw a young man, probably a few years older than me. I was 13, he probably was 19. He was being tortured. Five hoodlums came to the neighborhood and they were torturing him. And the others, people in the neighborhood, were watching in horror. And he came and stopped in front of me and said, "Sir, save me, Babu Omar Bachao." And I thought, I was 13 years old. If I went in there, they'd probably kill me too. So I still have guilt about it, not jumping in and trying to save him. The next year I was in Delhi, and I was actually saw a movie. Ironically, the movie we saw was Frankenstein. And on our way home, we were walking back, and we heard gunshots. And this tall, powerfully looking man with a turban and a beard, he was bloodied all over. He was running, he stumbled and fell. My friends jumped into a ditch. I jumped across a fence into a shade of a bicycle shop, cowering with fear, because if they saw me, they'd kill me. The man bent down on his knees, begging for mercy. They kicked him in his face and said, "Maro, die." And he said, "Ya Allah, oh God," and he died. We were at home, and another. This is the third. Fortunately, these are, we only saw three men being killed. He was a Tonga wala. Tonga is a horse cart. He came into our neighborhood with two passengers in the rear. And we all said, my mother, my sister-in-law, my brother, don't go there. Nahi jao, don't go there. They're going to kill you. He said, who's going to kill a poor Tonga wala? He didn't listen to us. He went, he doused him with gasoline and set him on fire. We saw him, this was about 50, maybe 75 yards from our home. Now, that's the end of the three people horrors. But what happened is, I'm talking now about my deliverance. This is something that I was visiting a friend, and it was a nice evening, and walking home, probably a 2 mile, maybe 3 mile home, an hour's walk home. Very pleasant evening. And as I reached the top of a hill, I saw this encampment of Pathan laborers. The Pathans are powerful looking men from Afghanistan. They look like the Taliban, dressed like the Taliban. But anyway, I saw it, and I knew I couldn't escape. So I walked in there cheerfully, charmed them all. They were noted for fiendish tortures and hospitality. Now, I wanted the hospitality, not the fiendish tortures. So I charmed them, and then at the end of it, I talked about Kabul, where they're from, and all kinds of things. I lied. I told them I was a Christian. My name is Arjun Ghosh. I changed it to Alfred Gross. And they were having a snack of dried apricots and walnuts. I said, "Oh, that sure looks good. Would you like a plate?" I took the plate. I knew I was safe, because now that I was a guest, I was would not be killed. So now many people, including my son-in-law, who's a confirmed atheist, say that I had a strength within me I didn't know. No. A higher power came and suffused me. I was transformed. I had no fear. I just walked in there and there was no fear. But it wasn't me. So anyway, I became very interested in religious texts. So I didn't have much use for Hinduism or Islam. The reason is because the Swamis, the Hindu leaders, and the mullahs, they did not speak out. They were very powerful. They didn't speak out about the massacres. So I turned to Buddhism and Christianity, and particularly the New Testament. And then I spent a month also in Swami Sivananda's ashram in the Himalayas. Now, Swami Sivananda is a genuine Hindu saint who I spent five in the morning to five at night meditating with breaks, and swam in the Ganges, and then came and cooked, helped in the kitchen, and listened to Swami Sivananda. Swami Sivananda believed in all religions, and he read from all religions. So that's something that really impressed me. When I came out of there, they all said, "You look different. You look different." I didn't know I looked different. He said, "My eyes were different." He said, "Eyes are different." What had happened, the trauma had disappeared. I didn't have any psychotherapy, but I was kind of cured. A year later, or not a year later, probably a few months later, I was not feeling well, which is very unusual. I never had upset stomachs. I've been healthy most of my life. But this day I had an upset stomach, and we were commuting by train. I went to the station platform, and I see these sentries armed with rifles, weapons. I said, what's going on? Gandhiji is coming. That's a big deal. You know how teenagers are like. Big deal. Gandhiji is coming. So what happens? The train comes and stops. Right in front of me, there's Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi. And he said in English, because he didn't know I spoke Hindi. He said, you're not at school? I said, I'm not feeling well. Well, take care of yourself. And that's all. The train moved away. Now, something happened to me. Not all the teenage nonsense out of my brain. I went and read his book, Story of My my Experiments with Truth. And I became a follower, devotee of Gandhi. I have a ring with Gandhi on it. So I'd like to really conclude by reading two passages from the Bible, which were my favorites. First of all is Matthew 5:38. It's about revenge. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But now I tell you, do not take revenge on someone who wrongs you. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, let him slap your left cheek also. And if someone takes you to court to sue you for your shirt, let him have your coat as well. And if one of the occupation troops forces you to carry his pack 1 kilometer, carry it 2 kilometers. When someone asks you for something, give it to him. When someone wants to borrow something, lend it to him. So that really resonated with me. And the second one I'm going to read is Luke 6:27. Now, I'm not going to read the Beatitudes because you've all read it, but that made a big impression on me. Luke 6:27. Sorry. Love for enemies. But I tell you, hear me, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who ill-treat you. If someone hits you on one cheek, let him hit the other one too. If someone takes your coat, let him have your shirt as well. Give to everyone who asks you for something, and when someone takes what is yours, do not ask for it back. Do for others what you want them to do for you. If you love only the people who love you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners love those that love them. But if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners do that. And if you lend only to those from whom you hope to get it back, why should you receive a blessing? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. No, love your enemies and do good to them. Lend and expect nothing back. You will then have a great reward, and you will be children of the Most High God, for he is good to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Now this, at the time when Hindus and Muslims were killing each other, made a huge impact on me. Thank you very much.